Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palca reporting. An entertainment icon is charged with sexual assault.
We are here to announce today charges that have just been filed against William Henry Cosby.
Prosecutors in the U.S. state of Pennsylvania have brought criminal charges against comedian Bill Cosby over the alleged sexual assault of a woman in 2004. This is Montgomery County Prosecutor Kevin Steele.
These charges stem from a sexual assault that took place on an evening in early 2004 at Mr. Cosby's home in Cheltenham Township, Montgomery County. Mr. Cosby is charged with aggravated indecent assault. This is a felony of the first degree. Mr. Cosby's attorney has been notified of the charges, and he is expected to be arraigned later this afternoon.
Montgomery County is in the suburbs of Philadelphia. The case deals with a former Temple University employee who told police that Mr. Cosby drugged and violated her at his home near Philadelphia. The 78-year-old Cosby has denied allegations from numerous women who have accused the entertainer of sexual assault and rape. Court documents show that Bill Cosby admitted under oath that he obtained Quaalude pills to give to women with whom he wanted to have sex, but he has insisted that these encounters were consensual. Polls have opened in the Central African Republic in a much-delayed election that many hope will end nearly 3 years of violence between Christians and Muslims since a 2013 coup. Security is high for Wednesday's presidential and legislative election, which was most recently delayed from Sunday to deal with technical difficulties. UN peacekeepers have been deployed to sensitive areas. More than 1.8 million people are expected to vote. This is VOA News. The U.S. military says an Islamic State leader with direct links to the alleged ringleader of last month's terrorist attacks in Paris was killed in a coalition airstrike in Syria. Charafi El-Mudain was killed on Christmas Eve. ISIS recruitment the world over is a problem, but particularly in Europe. VOA's Victor Beatty spoke with Abdul Kader Sino, an Indiana University regional analyst.
Those people would not have been susceptible to be recruited by IS if they did not feel alienated in their own countries. Europe has a big problem.
How can they address it?
What they're doing right now is the opposite of what they need to do. What they're doing right now is to increase policing, intrusive policing, into Muslim areas, into mosques, into institutions, when in fact they need to help those youth integrate, to become part of society. It's a long-term process, but that's the only way to go in Europe.
Has ISIS peaked?
It has already peaked, but however, it still has the ability to fight and to retaliate. All this may accelerate, and it may reach its demise in the next 2 years. On the other hand, a lot can happen over time. The Iraqi army is not ready yet. Now that they occupied Ramadi, they have cut the supply lines to Fallujah. But Mosul is a larger city. They have enough forces probably still to defend it. If for some reason they panic and people start to desert, then everything would get accelerated, and then they would be defeated much more quickly.
For more on this story, visit our website at voanews.com. Pakistan says it will host next month's inaugural meeting of a recently set up four-nation steering committee to discuss when, how, and where direct peace talks between the Afghan government and the Taliban could possibly be resumed. The quadrilateral committee, which consists of officials from Afghanistan, Pakistan, China, and the United States, is being convened sometime between January 10th and 15th in Islamabad. The African Union has threatened to place sanctions on Burundi's rival political factions if they fail to attend peace talks next month, as it pushes all sides to resolve their differences and avert more violence. AU Commission Chief Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma said sanctions could be placed on anyone whose action could jeopardize the inter-Burundian dialogue, including attacks by armed groups or refusal to communicate with the talks mediator. Turkey on Wednesday detained two suspected Islamic State members believed to be planning suicide attacks on New Year's celebrations in the country's capital. Turkish officials said the suspects were arrested in the Ankara area. The alleged plot involves suicide bombings in central Ankara, where crowds gather to celebrate the start of the new year. This is Joe Palca reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
More than 700 members of the Rwandan rebel group FDLR surrendered in the Democratic Republic of Congo during 2015, according to the United Nations. The UN mission in the DRC says many of those who gave themselves up were in poor health, and a high proportion are children.
That's Nick Long reporting from Goma in the eastern DRC. Details coming up.
Also, Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza is again rejecting the deployment of African Union peacekeepers in his country. And a panel of judges in Frankfurt, Germany, sentences a former Rwandan mayor to 14 years in prison for his role in the 1994 genocide.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza is again rejecting the deployment of African Union peacekeepers in his country. The Associated Press reports the president called the AU decision unacceptable and said the troops would be considered invaders violating the country's sovereignty. He warned a violation of Burundi's borders would be an attack on the country. The AU, meanwhile, is threatening to impose sanctions on all rival parties in Burundi if they fail to attend peace talks next month in Arusha, Tanzania. A tentative date of January 6th has been set for talks, which are being mediated by Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni. The French news agency AFP quotes AU Commission Chief Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma as saying all those whose action could jeopardize the inter-Burundian dialogue, as well as refusal to respond to the invitation of the mediator, shall be subjected to sanctions. Hundreds of people have died and many thousands displaced since April. That's when violence erupted after President Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term in office.
Throngs of voters lined up at polling stations early today in the capital of the Central African Republic, ready to elect a new president and parliament. Voters hope the election will end years of conflict and division. However, conditions for the elections originally scheduled for October remain imperfect. The poll has been marred by widespread logistical problems and claims of vote rigging. Katrina Hoya reports from Bangui that the post-election period might also be difficult to manage.
Expectations were high in Bangui ahead of Wednesday's vote. Outside one polling station in the neighborhood of Castor, near the city center, impatient voters hoping to turn a page on the country's three-year-long conflict lined up before dawn. Jean-Philippe Dora, a lawyer, said the population was ready for change. Dora says over the last 3 years, life has been suspended. People live in poverty. He says that is why we have to choose the right leader. Someone who can reconcile and reunite the country and bring hope to the population. Voters at some stations had to wait an extra hour or two due to last-minute logistical problems. We were supposed to open at 6 a.m., says Bienvenu Gubangi, an electoral worker manning a polling station. He says because the material arrived late, the truck didn't bring it here, so the polling station opened later. He says they will catch up. The electoral code says the station should be open for 10 hours. Even if they have to stay open late, everyone will be able to vote. The same determination to vote was seen during the constitutional referendum on December 13th. This time, however, much more is at stake. The new government will inherit a country in which sectarian violence remains rife and rebels and militia groups have yet to be disarmed. It will also have to determine how to assist the estimated 450,000 Central Africans, most of them Muslims, who remain refugees outside of the country. Another 460,000 are displaced within the country, among them 36,000 Muslims that are living in enclaves. In a country still awash in weapons, tensions between the majority Christian population and the minority Muslim population remain a great concern. Some minor problems with the voting were reported in Bangui Wednesday, but after some initial problems, the majority of voters were able to cast their ballots. Some logistical difficulties were expected, says Suleiman Ndiaye, the head of the African Union Electoral Observation Mission. After those are solved, the vote is going smoothly, he says. UN peacekeepers and local police protected polling stations in Bangui. Outside the capital, some polling stations are only reachable by boat or motorbike, making security and observation much more difficult. Among the 30 presidential candidates, three are considered frontrunners. Two of them, Martin Sigele and Anicet Dologele, were prime ministers under late President Ange-Félix Patassé. The third, Karim Mekaswa, is a Muslim who served as a minister under President François Bozizé until he was ousted in 2013 by Seleka rebels. Katrina Höje for VOA News, Bangui.
More than 700 members of the Rwandan rebel group FDLR surrendered in the Democratic Republic of Congo during 2015, according to the United Nations. The UN mission in the DRC says many of those who gave themselves up were in poor health and had a high proportion are children. Nick Long has more from Goma in the eastern DRC.
Estimates of the total number of FDLR fighters in Congo this year have varied between 1,500 and 2,500. In October, a group of UN experts on the DRC reported that 339 of the group's combatants had been captured or had surrendered over the first 8 months of the year. But last week, the UN mission in the DRC, MONUSCO, reported a surge in surrenders. The head of MONUSCO's Disarmament, Demobilization and Reintegration, or DDR section, Taz Grayling, announced the news at a year-end news conference. She said that from the start of the year up to December, 710 FDLR members have been disarmed and demobilized, of whom 315 were children.
Il y a eu une hausse de abandonnement de FDLR et entrée dans le système du DDR.
The rate of surrenders has accelerated since October, and those coming forward are in very bad physical and mental condition, she added. MONUSCO has also seen an increase in the number of wounded FDLR dependents, Grayling said. She appealed to the FDLR and other armed groups to move their families away from the combat zones and said MONUSCO and humanitarian agencies stand ready to help treat wounded dependents. Analyst Jason Stearns of the Congo Research Group questioned how many FDLR fighters are really turning themselves in.
There are many close in process.
He tells VOA that many people close to the disarmament process suggest the surrendering combatants the UN is talking about may have been sick or unfit combatants or may not have been combatants at all, but Congolese civilians arrested by the authorities. Stearns added that the FDLR cannot yet be written off. They definitely retain a capacity for military operations, he says, and are by far the largest and most dangerous armed group still in eastern Congo. Largely speaking, their command structure and hierarchy has not been affected by demobilization, he says. A Congolese expert on demobilization, Didier Bitaki, suggested on local radio recently that some Rwandan rebels may have claimed to be Congolese when they surrendered and so may not have been counted as FDLR. He called for closer monitoring of the DDR process of Congolese armed groups. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
A panel of judges in Frankfurt, Germany, has sentenced a former Rwandan mayor to 14 years in prison for his role in the 1994 genocide. The former mayor of Muvumba, Onisifori Rwabukombi, was convicted yesterday. He was accused of ordering an attack on a church in the eastern town of Kizigura, where Rwandans had sought refuge. The attack killed 450 people. At his trial, more than 100 witnesses described attackers using machetes, sticks, and hatchets. More than 800,000 ethnic Tutsi and moderate Hutu were killed in Rwanda's genocide. Rwabukombi sought asylum in Germany in 2002. He was arrested in 2010. After a three-year trial, a German court convicted him in 2014. A later appeal failed.
The UN Refugee Agency reports more than 1 million refugees and migrants have reached Europe by sea this year, with 80% of this record number landing on small, overcrowded Greek islands. The latest figures released Wednesday, which account for only migration by sea, mark an increase in the number of migrants reaching Europe by sea and land. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency says refugees fleeing war and persecution are paying a heavy price in their desperation to find a safe haven. It reports 3,735 people have lost their lives this year, making the dangerous Mediterranean Sea crossing. This translates to an average of 10 deaths or missing persons every day. The UNHCR reports the total number of seaborne refugees this year is nearly five times higher than last, when just over 200,000 arrived in Europe, making this the biggest refugee crisis in Europe since World War II. UNHCR spokesman Adrian Edwards says between 2,000 and 3,000 people, most of them Syrians, continue to arrive by boats on the islands of the Aegean every day, despite the freezing cold temperatures and raging seas. He tells VOA the refugees fleeing conflicts in their countries take to the sea because most land routes into Europe are blocked.
There are restrictions at the border. We have countries that have erected fences along borders, land borders, and sea really remains the main viable option for those people. Unfortunately, what it means, though, is that smuggling is profiting in a major way. It means that people are drowning. It means that the systems for making this regular movement of people aren't yet in place.
Edwards notes Europe's migration crisis reflects what he calls an era of record-breaking forcible displacement. A recent UNHCR report finds the number of people who are refugees or internally displaced because of conflict now exceeds more than 60 million. The UNHCR spokesman says a major problem facing those fleeing to Europe is one of perception. He says this can be seen in the language people around the world use to describe this situation.
Many people still prefer to talk about this as a migrant crisis rather than a refugee one. Now, migrants migrate, refugees flee. Word choices really do matter. Both terms have become politically loaded in the context of the situation in Europe.
Under international refugee law, Edwards says nations are obliged to offer protection to people fleeing conflict and persecution. He says efforts to blur the distinction between refugees and economic migrants are putting the lives of many people who have a legitimate claim to asylum at risk. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The European Union's Border Patrol is beefing up efforts to manage the migration crisis in Greece. That's where the vast majority of migrants and refugees from the Middle East, Africa and Asia have landed in recent months. The AP says the EU's Border Control Service, known as Frontex, is deploying almost 300 officers, interpreters and document experts to help identify and fingerprint migrants. Also, 14 vessels will aid in monitoring Greek shores for boats in distress. Frontex said it aims to scale up the mission in Greece to 400 officers with vessels, vehicles, and other technical equipment.
The animal welfare and wildlife conservation group Born Free USA announced their top 10 victories in 2015 in their efforts to protect wildlife and endangered animals around the world. One major announcement this week involved increased protection for African lions. In response to a Born Free petition, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services recently listed lions in Central and Western Africa as endangered and lions in Southern and Eastern Africa as threatened. Kate Dalewski is a program associate for Born Free USA. She explains the significance of this ruling as well as highlights other wildlife victories in 2015.
This is a tremendous victory for lion conservation, something that we've been working towards for years now, and we're so, so pleased with this outcome. And this split between one section of the continent, lions listed as endangered, and another listed as threatened, is a really good development because it means Fish and Wildlife Service recognizes the difference between the lion populations in these areas and actually, in fact, the genetic differences between the lions in these areas. Because we see in Central and Western Africa, where they're now listed as endangered, that there are only about 900 lions left there, which is, you know, obviously an extreme situation, something that urgently needs to be addressed. And their habitat is so fragmented, and each of the populations in that area are so isolated that we're not seeing the opportunity for a lot of genetic diversity, a lot of ability to rebound and grow those numbers. So these protections are really crucial there.
In light of that, one of the biggest stories that came out of this year, 2015, was the tragic death of Cecil the Lion. So can you tell us about how this led up to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service issuing this as an endangered species?
Well, Cecil was obviously an extremely tragic event. You know, the loss of this incredible lion, this really well-known lion in Africa. But what we have seen come out of it is tremendous public awareness and really this galvanized effort in the second half of 2015 to address trophy hunting and a greater recognition that trophy hunting does not aid conservation efforts, that it is just, in fact, you know, the ego of these hunters going to kill these beautiful animals. So after Cecil's death, we've seen a few new developments. And the end of the summer and this fall, we saw federal legislation introduced. Senator Menendez and Representative Grijalva introduced the Cecil Animal Trophies Act, which would help crack down on trophy hunting of species that are proposed to be threatened or endangered but are not yet listed, which is the situation that the lion was in until recently. We've also seen legislation in New Jersey, which tends to be so out front as far as states go in terms of wildlife legislation. We've seen two bills introduced there to crack down on the importation of trophy-hunted wildlife. And then we've also seen, following Cecil's death, over 40 airlines banned the transport of hunted trophies from the big five African species. So that's lion, leopard, elephant, rhino, and Cape buffalo. This is something that we've been working on for a really long time, but, you know, Cecil was the impetus, and the public outrage really around that incident was the impetus for these airlines to finally say, okay, no more, we won't transport these species.
And looking at some of the other animals and wildlife, there's been tremendous strides made regarding ivory and rhino horn legislation. Can you tell us about some of the highlights of this year?
There was really a groundswell this year of state attention toward ivory and rhino horn. In 2014, we saw New York and New Jersey, again, New Jersey being out front on this, ban or greatly restrict the sale of ivory and rhino horn in those states. And so in 2015, there were nearly 20 similar bills introduced across the country. A lot of other state legislators got inspired. And, you know, a lot of progress was made on a lot of those bills. Not all of them passed. But we did see a California bill signed into law on October 4th, which closed a loophole in that state that allowed for the sale of these products. And then a month later, Washington state voters approved a ballot measure which would end the trade not only in ivory and rhino horn, but in certain other endangered species as well.
Looking ahead in 2016, what would you say are your highest priorities and what future challenges lie ahead?
One of these priorities is pushing for more state bans on ivory and rhino horn sales because we feel like we have the momentum. We've seen, you know, really great victories in some states, and we think that other states have the potential to get these passed. So we're hoping to see that right off the bat starting in January. We also will be participating in CITES in 2016. There is a meeting in September in South Africa, nations across the globe coming together to look at several issues, but our priorities are a few. We're looking to increase global protection for lions on top of this recent ESA listing. We're looking to secure additional protection for 8 species of pangolins. We're looking to prevent any legalization of trade in rhino horn. We're also going to try and defeat any proposals advocating for any trade in elephant ivory. And additionally, we're going to continue to push to stop the intensive breeding of tigers in Chinese tiger farms. And the final thing that I want to highlight for 2016 is that we are in a really great position right now as a nation to finally end marine mammal captivity. Following blackfish a couple of years ago and various legislative efforts and a lot of public outcry in the past couple of years. We saw federal legislation introduced recently, the Orca Act, to phase out orcas in captivity across the country. And that, coupled with state action and with, you know, continued public demonstrations, I think that we can really make great progress on that issue this year.
Kate Dalewski is a program associate for Born Free USA. She spoke with me from Washington, D.C.
A new treatment which kills the virus that causes AIDS has cleared the first hurdle. The experimental drug provides a new approach in the fight against HIV. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
VRC01 is called a monoclonal antibody, a relatively recent development in the arsenal of bioengineered therapies. Monoclonal antibodies are similar to the antibodies produced by the human immune system, which are proteins that go after and destroy disease-causing organisms. But monoclonal drugs contain antibodies explicitly engineered by scientists to target a specific disease. They now include drugs designed to suppress the immune system, so autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis and ulcerative colitis can be treated and rev up the body's natural defenses to fight cancer. While they don't always result in a cure, in many instances, monoclonal antibodies significantly slow disease progression. In an early clinical trial involving just over 20 HIV-infected individuals, VRC01 was extremely effective in attacking and destroying the AIDS virus.
It was safe. There were no problems with doing it. And two, it temporarily decreased the level of virus in the people who are not receiving antiretroviral therapy.
Anthony Fauci is director of the U.S. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, whose scientists designed the HIV antibody. He says there was no response in the 15 patients who were taking anti-AIDS drugs, perhaps because that therapy had already driven the virus down to virtually undetectable levels. But among the others, an infusion of VRC01 totally knocked out the virus for 20 days in two participants. Others saw their virus load significantly drop for up to 3 weeks. However, a couple of patients in this group saw no effect, and scientists determined they were infected with drug-resistant strains of HIV. The results were published in the journal Science Translational Medicine. Since the virus reemerged a few weeks after treatment, Fauci says future trials are going to look at whether HIV can be suppressed with repeat infusions.
This is an important first step towards determining the feasibility of using monoclonal antibodies for the prevention and treatment of HIV.
Researchers have not ruled out using VRC01 to shield high-risk individuals against HIV infection. Fauci says it's likely the second phase of clinical trials, further testing the safety and effectiveness of the anti-AIDS monoclonal antibody, will take place next year. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Marty Curcius, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, Pope Francis recently took his message of religious tolerance to Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests discuss interfaith solutions to combat religious intolerance and extremism. That's next time on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.